Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday and welcome into a brand new episode of the Hawk Central Radio Hour here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. I am your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. As always, we are with you from 6 to 7 o'clock tonight. And wow, we have a ton of topics to address on tonight's show. It is late June, if you've checked your calendars, although it feels like a football-basketball crossover season in mid-November at this point with so much going on. Among tonight's show topics are my recent sit-down interview with Iowa football coach Kirk Ferentz. We spoke last Friday in his office over a wide range of topics. Posted something on NIL last week. My column on all topics posted today and will be in Sunday's Register. We'll peel out a few of those topics here. We'll talk about Iowa football recruiting. We are 24 hours out from Keegan Murray, perhaps being the highest chosen Hawkeye in NBA draft history. And over the past week or so, I've been able to interview seven of the Hawkeyes' 11 scholarship basketball players as their summer program is going in full swing. To discuss all of this, I am really, really happy to be joined by my friend and colleague on the Hawkeye beat, freshly back from a vacation in Atlanta, Kennington Smith. Kennington, good to have you back, man.
Yeah, it's great to be back. I feel like I've missed like 75% of May and June just being on my vacation. And I'm the type when I'm away, like I really unplug, like I'm rarely on Twitter, I'm rarely tweeting. So I feel like I've missed a lot in the last few months, so it feels good to be back and know that I'm going to be here consistently, you know, for the next several months. So I'm glad to get back into the swing of things, and it seems like it came at a perfect time because there's just, you know, so much going on around Iowa sports.
Absolutely, and we talked a little bit before, recording this show, and you are definitely plugged in. You've stayed looped in to what's been going on here, so it's not like you're coming into these topics cold. And where I kind of wanted to start tonight, Kennington, is with the NIL topic, something Kirk Ferentz talked about in great detail with me. That was probably, I would say, of the 45 to 60 minutes we spent together, I would say that was like the biggest percentage of our conversation just because there was so much about it. And he was very passionate about that, I would say. He thinks college football is in a really scary place. He doesn't like where it's going. He doesn't like where it is. He thinks the top 10, 12, 15 programs will separate even further from the rest. And Iowa, of course, would be in the rest in terms of, you know, financial power, backing, whatever you want to call it. And he is of the opinion, Kennington, that some of these programs out there, let's say Tennessee, Texas A&M, Texas, I'm sure you could name Georgia in there as well, I'm guessing. You could tell me, but he thinks that those programs will have no problem with repeated, you know, millions and millions of dollars in player roster, roster stocking backing, whereas that's not, he does not believe that is going to be the case at a school like Iowa. So first off, just as you soak that in, give me a reflection on what you think about what Kirk Ferentz said, and maybe with a little context coming from, you know, coming, spending some time back in Atlanta and knowing what's going on, you know, down at Georgia and what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, to start about where he said, what he said about college athletics going into a very scary place, I think that my takeaway from that and kind of how I perceive where NIL is right now is I don't think that neither the NCAA or the institutions expected NIL to so quickly shift from an avenue for players to make money, which it is obviously, but we're starting to see now it become more of a leverage tool used by athletes against universities to get the highest amount of money that they can receive. And if they're not getting it from their university, then they can go into the transfer portal and go seek that option from another school. And I think that's a development that many of us did not expect to happen. And if we did expect it to happen, we didn't expect it to happen so quickly. And I think that that's probably the scariest part about it is if you're a coach, the challenge of not only recruiting really hard to get players into your facility, but how hard it might be to keep them there for the duration of their college careers, because there's just so many factors to consider. as far as where I look at it from a standpoint of a fan and an alum of an SEC school, you know, I'm very tapped into what Georgia has going on recruiting, and I look around to what's going on around the South and other big programs. And this is a very, very prominent conversation. It's a conversation that's happening every day on message boards, among fans on Twitter, at these major powerhouse schools, because you are right, a school like Georgia, the Tennessees, the Texas, the Alabamas, these are kind of the big fish and the big sharks that live and compete in this NIL space every day, because they're competing for the highest prospects annually, the fours and the five stars who are going to be in line to receive these big deals coming out of high school. So it is a huge conversation. There was a huge domino that fell recently with Reuben Owens, one of the top running backs in the country, committing to Louisville. I know we're going to discuss that, but that's just kind of an example of you know, how volatile recruiting has become. And you know, in a lot of cases, even at the highest level, you can recruit as hard and you can recruit as well as anybody in the country, but at the end of the day, if there's a prospect that values, you know, earning money for themselves, and they value NIL opportunities, and there's a school that plays Power Five that's going to come in with a bag that maybe the school that you're being recruited by doesn't feel comfortable matching, then recruits will make that business decision to kind of follow that NIL deal. And I don't blame them at all. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them to kind of earn this type of money. But that is, you know, just kind of the landscape that we're living in, and that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, Ferentz, you know, kind of advocates for an NFL-style system with, he didn't actually say, like, yeah, we need a salary cap, but he says the only way to make it fair is to kind of develop an NFL-style system in college football, which does, you know, the NFL does have a salary cap. It does have, you know, contracts that limit roster movement. One thing I didn't include in the article, but that he talked about, was the case of like Debo Samuel. Like, if Debo Samuel was in college, he could just jump in the portal and go wherever he wants. However, his movement is a little bit restricted with the San Francisco 49ers because he's under contract. So I think that he used that as an example, Kennington, of something that I think he thinks is productive in the college game, but would be productive, I should say. However, you know, that gets back to, again, our coaches restricting, you know, college athletes' rights. And that becomes a legal issue. So that's very, very complicated. And, you know, college football does not have a commissioner or anything like that, really. And pretty much weak power in the NCAA. We've seen, pretty much anything goes right now. So that is understandable. And you bring up a great point. I mean, we've used the Justin Jacobs example before as somebody. Here's a kid not from Iowa who comes from Ohio, who Iowa has developed into a really good player. Now, Iowa is very fortunate that he's still on the team and in a lot of ways. But it, like you said, I mean, Iowa could spend 3 years developing the guy. Then all of a sudden Ohio State says, hey, we got $750,000 for you to you know, be our weak side linebacker, you know, week one against, you know, Notre Dame or whatever. Right.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, that's the part of it that is, you know, for coaches, it has to feel uncomfortable because for so many years, for better or for worse, they had so much control kind of their programs and their roster management and their personnel, and especially where players could transfer to if they, you know, elected to transfer before the portal became a thing. And now that you kind of have this era of more player freedom and player mobility, it's just another element of a coach's job that they're going to have to manage. And as far as kind of the salary cap thing, you are right, it does bring up an interesting point of maybe what's fair for every institution versus the idea of free market value. And if there is a school that is willing to pay $2 million, $3 million, whatever the case may be, that might sound crazy to a school like Iowa, might sound crazy to a fan or a media member like you and me, but if that's what somebody is willing to pay, then you really can't regulate it, kind of in this free market space. So it is really interesting. I think that we're kind of at this point now where it is going to get a little bit hard to regulate, especially without a true power structure in place by the NCAA. It kind of seems like so many people were asking for NIL are asking for players to be compensated for so long, and that the NCAA, when they finally allowed it to happen, it was kind of like, okay, it's allowed to happen, and we're just going to let the chips fall where they may, and we're just going to let the schools kind of decide how to govern it on their own. And that's kind of the impact that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I think it was, I can't remember what the report was, Kennington, but someone out there very recently, you brought this up to me. So why don't you point, you tell the listeners, educate the listeners. Ohio State is like the king of NIL, basically. Like, if you go to Ohio State, you make the most dollars or something like that, right?
Yeah, they are the top school right now in terms of total money generated in NIL across all athletics, and they also have the most athletes on campus who have at least one NIL deal.
Yeah, and that's a competitor of Iowa, and Ferentz actually spent a lot of time in our interview referencing Ohio State because Ryan Day recently talked about how quarterbacks cost $2 million, offensive tackles cost $1 million. It is definitely a topic high on his mind, and he does not like where it's going. He also said he's never going to be one to bark at donors, for more money for players, one of the coaches in the Big Ten East who Iowa played last year at home in a top five matchup did, a couple weeks ago. So, not Ferentz's, mode of operation. Anyway, you're listening to Hawk Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. This is Chad Lystico, your host tonight, as always, talking Hawkeye football with Kennington Smith. Kennington, you referenced Reuben Owens. I think it's a great example of, here's Ferentz saying we can't compete with the Ohio States of the world dollar for dollar. And he kind of pointed out the fact that they basically had three first round NFL receivers last year. And obviously a very talented quarterback who could be the number one overall pick this year. He's like, we can't be in that neighborhood. But at the same time, the Louisville Cardinals last year went 6-7, Kennings. I can't even name who their coach is. Satterfield? Something like that, right?
Yep.
On Monday, they landed a five-star running back out of Texas named Reuben Owens. This isn't like a local kid. A five-star running back came from Texas, choosing Louisville over Texas and Texas A&M. He's rated the number one running back in the country, and Louisville now has five players with four stars or better. So isn't that a sign that, non-traditional programs can make, waves in this NIL world? In a way, there is a path to leveling the playing field, in my opinion.
Yes, there absolutely is. And it's by having boosters and a donor base that is willing to spend a lot of money. I think that that's the as much as NIL might widen the gap, it is also a great equalizer for small schools who probably wouldn't be able to compete for elite prospects anyway. Now, we're talking about Louisville. Reuben Owens, as of right now, is the second highest rated commitment in their program's history. Furthermore, you said they have five four-star or more prospects. Four of them, their top four, are four of their top 17 commitments of all time. So we're talking about a true historic class. And if NIL was the driver to get all four of these kids on campus, we're talking about them recruiting at a clip that they wouldn't have been able to recruit at had this place not existed. And to your point, they got these four kids out of two of the toughest states to pull elite prospects out of, Texas and California.
And the University. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the University of Tennessee is another example. They got quarterback Nico Amialeva, four-star prospect. He's the third highest rated recruit in program history, and that's the University of Tennessee. They're in the SEC. They recruit at a high clip, and he was the one that kind of had that polarizing $8 million deal that was reported by The Athletic several months ago. So this is just an illustration of teams that you might not expect to compete recruiting wise or athletically on the same playing field as like an Alabama or an Ohio State or a USC or a Texas. But because of this new model, they're able to kind of level the playing field, but they're doing it, because they kind of have those big dollars to back their programs.
And Kirk Ferentz also in this interview, kind of confirmed what his son had said on a podcast recently, that their plan with the NIL collective that is not formally announced yet, formally official yet. It's an outside collective, obviously. They all are. But Iowa is pretty close, it sounds like, to having that put together. But he is of the opinion that it should take care of current roster members and not really be as a recruiting inducement type of thing. Would not preclude outside NIL deals. There'll be other branches of NIL that are possible for, you know, maybe big stars, something like that. But certainly he is an advocate at this point. I mean, that could change, but at this point of kind of paying players the same amounts throughout the roster and taking care of current roster members as opposed to recruiting. So essentially I was recruiting with $0 against, you know, the Alabamas of the world. And we'll get to somebody who's between Alabama and Iowa in a minute. But that it's an interesting approach, right, Kennington? I mean, he kind of is doubling down on the fact that, hey, we can do this by developing and having a unified locker room that does not have, you know, disparities in terms of what kids are making, what they're getting paid. I don't know. How do you buy that? Do you buy that as a realistic philosophy for winning?
I think for Iowa specifically, that is a strong strategy. I don't think that it could work at every school, but I think if we're looking at Iowa, their brand, from what I can understand and what I've observed over the last year, is kind of getting those kids who are the under-recruited kids and developing them, very strong walk-on culture. Those are not the type of recruits that you think about getting the large NIL deals. You think of the guys like the Caden Proctors and the Xavier Wampas and the Brandon Ennises and the Reuben Owens as the ones who are really kind of thinking about NIL in that particular way. But if you look at what happened with the Xavier Wampa and with Caden Proctor, they have been interested and they were interested in Iowa even kind of before the NIL era. So I think that for them being able to do it in that way of kind of developing kids and then selling them on the fact that if you do come here, you know, you might not get any money on the front end, but if you believe in kind of our development system and you go through the program, you're going to be compensated on the back end. And if there are going to be elite prospects that are going to be interested in your school, like a Proctor, a Wampa, Aaron Graves, et cetera, you already kind of had whatever you had already as a program foundation. Those kids were already interested in, or else they wouldn't be considering your school in the first place. So I think that for Iowa, it's a strategy that can work, but I don't think that that's something that can be replicated everywhere because not everybody recruits, develops, and kind of has the same foundational values as an Iowa does.
Let's say Iowa, let's say for argument's sake, Iowa allocated in its collective $1 million a year for recruiting. That's not a lot to spread around 20 guys or more necessarily. I mean, it's a lot. But what is the one position that is the biggest problem for Iowa that we always talk about historically?
Great. Quarterback.
So could there be a system? What about a system like where you say, hey, we know quarterback is the most important position. We are going to spend our money on getting a difference maker at quarterback at the University of Iowa because that we know our defense is going to be good. We know our special teams are going to be good. And you would think, you know, if you're the Tampa Bay Bucks, like, do you think, you know, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, they were probably pretty happy that they had Tom Brady throwing passes, right? I mean, I think that's the type of position everyone understands. Hey, they should be getting money. I don't have an objection at all to something like that if Iowa wanted to think a little creatively, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And this goes back to the Tennessee example with Nico Amialeva. That is, at this point right now, we obviously haven't seen him play at the collegiate level, but at this point, getting a quarterback that highly rated and one of the highest in your program's history, that feels like a paradigm-shifting recruit. And if he comes in and he plays well and he's able to attract other receivers and offensive linemen and other great players to Tennessee because they want to play with somebody like him, that is an investment that is going to be returned tenfold to the collective and the university and everybody who donated because it's going to turn out to be so successful. So if there was a situation where, you know, obviously I was not going to go above and beyond and pay a lot of money for every single prospect, but I don't think that I personally wouldn't be opposed, and I don't think that they should be opposed to, you know, making an exception and making a big investment on a, that type of paradigm shifting prospect. If one was made available and it made sense to, you know, the university for them to do so, like if there was common interest and wanted to kind of go for it and see if they can get a five-star quarterback on campus.
Can you imagine?
Like five-star receipt. You, any five-star position, namely on offense or a skill position that you think could really shift the tide of the program, I feel like you have to consider that. I mean, again, Louisville, for example, they have, you know, 25% of the highest prospects they've ever had are currently committed. You don't think that that is something that the boosters feel is, you know, a solid investment, especially if they're able to really make themselves players in the ACC. So a situation like that presented itself, I don't think that, you know, Iowa should turn their nose up at it because it could have, you know, long lasting effects. You know, let's say they get one quarterback in and he does well, it might be easier to recruit the next quarterback and the next quarterback and another group of receivers and running backs and skill positions. And then you kind of have that, that snowballing effect from there.
We had a lot of, a lot more time budgeted to talk about Iowa football recruiting's huge weekend coming up, but we're kind of running out of time in this segment. So Kennington, let's just transition to one more question here before we go to break. Since our last show, Southeast Polk's Caden Proctor narrowed his list to Iowa and Alabama. That was a very positive move for the Hawkeyes. He canceled official visits to Penn State, to Oregon, to Michigan, and he added one to the Hawkeyes. I mean, he was, Iowa was already high on his list because he's been there 10 plus times, but he wasn't planning to visit officially. Now he is this particular weekend. I think he's close to being done with the process. What kind of litmus test is this decision now? From everything we just talked about, you know, Proctor has, Iowa has had the inside track on Proctor NIL side since the Penn State game, from what we've been told. So how does this decision potentially impact, you know, the way Iowa operates in terms of, maybe it doesn't change anything, but there's going to be a lot of upset fans if he goes to Alabama when Iowa's kind of had the inside track all along.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the way I would look at it is if he commits to Iowa, then that would be validation for parents and the coaching staff that their model of recruiting is, in fact, successful. I don't know that in this particular case, if he goes to Alabama, it's a byproduct of Iowa not having NIL because, you know, this is Alabama that we're talking about. And we've seen the history of, you know, Iowa's a great offensive line school, but Alabama has put offensive linemen into the NFL as well, perennially in the top 10. They have had Evan Neal go very high in the draft this past year, I believe at number 7 overall. So they're another school that's known for developing offensive linemen, particularly offensive tackles. So I don't know if I would blame it necessarily on that, but for him to even give this visit to Iowa when he wasn't going to do it before to put them in the top two, you have to feel strongly about the way that Iowa has recruited in spite of not having, you know, NIL collective. So if he were to commit to Iowa, I feel like it's validating for what Ferentz has been preaching about how they approach these type of things. And then if you think about what Iowa football will look like in the post-collective era, if they were able to recruit players like Wampa and Proctor and get them on campus before, imagine what their recruiting pitch could be, like I spoke on earlier about developing those kids, getting them on campus, and then they'll be able to receive some compensation on the back end.
Great football conversation, man. We could just do this all day, I think, Kennington. But we've got to move on. Coming up next, we will touch on a little more football, a little more of my Kirk Ferentz interview, maybe a little recruiting. But by this time, tomorrow night, Keegan Murray will be settling into the NBA draft green room. How big a deal is this for Hawkeye basketball? We'll discuss football, basketball, more next on Hawk Central, 1460 KXNO, now on 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. I'm your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. Fun, lively conversation about NIL. In the previous segment with my coworker, Kennington Smith, who's joining me tonight. A couple more things. We did want to set the table for this recruiting weekend in Iowa City. Some have called it the biggest ever at Iowa. There's going to be 20-plus official visitors. That's a lot. That's about 40%, maybe more, of what you're allotted an entire year. Iowa putting a lot of stock into this weekend. Obviously, Caden Proctor is one of them. A couple other names to watch. Offensive lineman Trevor Lauk from Indianapolis. He's down to Iowa, Michigan State, and Ohio State. Defensive lineman Kendrick Gilbert, also from Indianapolis, a four-star. He's LSU, apparently Iowa's biggest competition there. Outside linebacker Asa Newsome of Waverly. Minnesota, K-State, Iowa there. One thing, our colleague Alyssa Hurdle, she will have a story on all these official visitors, so check out HawkCentral.com. It might be up already. But she mentioned tight end Zach Orthworth of St. Louis. Iowa has kind of struck out on tight ends to this point. But probably needs one in this class. So he's from St. Louis, has Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin at the top of his list. So there's going to be a lot, I would say a lot of, or at least some stories probably, coming out of Iowa City this weekend with commitments. Who knows if Caden Proctor pulls the trigger. Don't have a total read on that. But I think there's a better than 50% chance he chooses Iowa. We will see. Kennington, another piece of the football puzzle. In that Kirk Ferentz interview, which you can read at HawkCentral.com, DesMoinesRegister.com. We have a great deal at DesMoinesRegister.com, which gets you Hawk Central access. You can sign up for 2 years of register access for just $22. That's less than a buck a month. Like I've said before, it takes you through Caitlin Clark's career at Iowa, so I don't know how you can pass that up. Easy to read my Kirk Ferentz column. One of the things in there, Kennington, that we will touch on here, but I do want you to read because of the... You know, there's a lot of layers to it, but Kirk Ferentz did confirm to me in our interview that he is not going to continue at this point a formal advisory group as he had for 18 months, and it was a big news item in January. Instead, kind of relying on the existing DEI structure at the University of Iowa. Talked about Lou Montgomery, who's in the athletics role right now. Liz Tovar, who's the executive director of DEI for the entire campus, while also bringing former players into the fold during fall camp, spring practices, whatnot. He said, call them checkups. But in essence, there will be no formal committee. I guess just any thoughts as you hear Kirk Ferentz's plans on that front. We know what a lightning rod this issue was back in January.
Yeah, and it's obviously going to regenerate conversations as more people, you know, read your article and they begin to formulate thoughts on his latest move. I think that for me and the way that I'm thinking about it, it's less about an advisory committee or having something in place. It's more about how comfortable the players are in the program, in my opinion. So obviously when everything happened in 2020, the players didn't feel comfortable. We're talking about, you know, minority black players, players of color didn't feel comfortable within the program. And Ferentz feels that 18 months later, the advisory board did what they needed to do in order of fostering a more comfortable culture within the football program. So if there's not going to be an advisory board in place, that's fine. But do the players feel comfortable speaking out, and do they feel comfortable in the football facility day to day? That should really be the question that's being posed here, not about whether there should be an advisory board, not a board, or, you know, however they're going to make these changes and have players coming in and out of the program, which is great. But at the end of the day, is that going to yield more comfort within the players? And I don't have that answer right now. Nobody has that answer right now. And to allude to something that a former player now, Tyrone Tracy, said all throughout last summer, is this is something that's going to be answered 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. So, I can't really say, you know, good decision, bad decision in terms of dissolving the board permanently. I'm more focused on, do the players in the building and the incoming players, do they truly have that sense of comfort and they feel like they can speak out and voice their opinions on certain things more so today in 2022 than they could in any other year before 2020?
Well said, Kennington. Appreciate that. You guys can read my thoughts in that column as well. I think certainly there's a lot of evidence that things have gone well. You know, in terms of culture, they're doing well in recruiting. And, you know, he has been praised for that open door policy, more open door than in the past. So, again, like we have not heard of any, not one single story of any, negatively, negative experience, I guess, from a player yet since the changes were instituted in 2020. So we just kind of have to keep monitoring it and report back to you. And that's kind of what I did in this interview. So anyway, Kennington, move on to NBA draft. You've been really plugged in on Keegan Murray and with the Murray family. Really appreciate your efforts. And I will even say, I hope, you had an interview with Keegan last week while you were on vacation. And I know you published something, so hopefully you'll get that day back, my friend. But just kind of want to throw it to you here, Kennington, on this topic. In general, how high could Keegan Murray go in Thursday night's NBA draft?
I think that the highest that he could go is probably in the top four.
But when you say top four, do you think like four, or do you think even higher? Do you think it's possible?
I think there was a possibility with Houston at three. There was a recent trade where they think that they're hoping that Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga falls to them at three and they can fill that void. Then you're looking at number four with Sacramento. There's been a lot of discussion about whether they're going to keep that pick, and that pick could be Keegan Murray. Presumably it would be Jaden Ivey. If they trade that number four pick because it is so highly coveted, then we don't know what team trading up in that spot is targeting. It could be Ivy. It could be Keegan. It could be Shaedon Sharpe. It could be Ben Mathurin from Arizona. It could be a number of prospects. So there's a lot of intrigue there with that number four pick. So that's the highest that he could go. In my opinion, the lowest that he would go is number seven to the Portland. That's the lowest, in my opinion. I say that because, one, Keegan is the 3-4 that Dame has been hoping for pretty much the latter half of his career. I think he would fit really perfectly in that system alongside him. And one of the draft analysts, Mike Schmitz, who was formerly of ESPN, was one of the highest analysts on Keegan throughout the season and early in the draft process, is now an assistant GM with the Portland Trailblazers. So I don't think that if Keegan made it to seven, that he would pass on an opportunity to draft somebody who he thought so highly of. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of where he would land. I think that obviously there's a lot of intrigue there with five and six with the Pistons and the Pacers. So that's where probably he would go between those two spots.
Hey, Detroit and Indiana are both Gannett Mark. That'd be good for us. That'd be good. We would have a lot of Keegan Murray coverage and also kind of in Big Ten country. So, and we know Keegan lit up Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I guess it's not called Bankers Life, but Gainbridge Fieldhouse back in March. So isn't that, that's where the Pacers play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just ask Indiana, the Hoosiers, how Keegan Murray did that. So I know you've been talking to the Murrays. I saw he threw out the first pitch at a Cubs game. He's talking to Derek Jeter on Zoom, apparently, a childhood friend of Kenyon. So, give me a sense of kind of the behind the scenes stuff that you can share. I'm not sure what all you're allowed to share, but kind of the draft prep and just sort of like the unique opportunity. I mean, this is going to be the highest draft pick of the Fran McCaffrey era. Almost certainly the highest draft pick since Ronnie Lester in 1980. He was number 10 to Portland, and possibly the highest draft pick of a Hawkeye ever. Fred Brown at number 6 in 1971 to Seattle holds that distinction. So what can you share with us, Kennington, about Keegan's NBA draft experience thus far?
Yeah, it's been quite a whirlwind. So, he was training in Chicago. He moved out of where he was living in Chicago and moved all his stuff back to their Cedar Rapids home. He spent Father's Day weekend there. Then the family flew out to New York City on Tuesday. So he's gone through his fittings and all of that. And, while he's out there, there's an array of social events that he's been going to and things that are kind of NBA sponsored that he's been doing along with the other green room invitees. And there's a lot of exciting things that he's been able to do and people he's been able to meet. I do have a piece that's up on Hawk Central right now for our subscribers that really gives, the full scope of kind of everything that he's been doing over the last few days. So out of love and respect for our subscribers, I won't go too much into detail, but he really he's having a great time out there, and he's had a jam-packed schedule. But there is one thing in the story that I will share on the air is if you think that it's all fun and games for Keegan, that is not the case. He is still actively working out in New York City. He actually left a social event on Tuesday night to go back to the hotel and lift weights. So he is, you know, obviously enjoying it, but he's still very much locked in and just excited to see what team he'll end up on.
Absolutely. I know Fran McCaffrey will be out there. I assume Chris will be out there, right? Chris will be out there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I saw him yesterday at practice. We will get more into that in a minute, but good stuff. Follow us along at hawkcentral.com, DesMoinesRegister.com. Thursday night for NBA draft coverage of Keegan Murray. Kennington and I have got you covered. All right, Kennington, let's talk some current Hawkeye hoops when we come back. Great insight from you on Keegan, and like I said, more coverage to come. We've had a chance to interview everyone in the projected Hawkeye lineup, plus two top reserves in the last week or so, plus got a view at an open practice. Wanted to share what we learned coming up next here on Hawk Central, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Chad Lystico here of the Des Moines Register, taking you to 7 o'clock tonight, along with my colleague Kennington Smith, my well-rested colleague. We're ready. We're just about ready for another vacation handoff. I think I'm off for 18 days, maybe, after the NBA draft. But got to get through the draft first, Kennington. Good discussion in our previous segment on Keegan Murray. If you missed any of tonight's show to date, make sure to catch our podcast. You can find that at hawkcentral.com or just go to Apple and search Hawk Central, two words. Always appreciate everyone's feedback on this show. It's really humbling to hear about how you know, people really recognize, they recognize us sometimes, Kennington, more for our radio show than our writing sometimes. But we like to point you to our hard work, you know, with our keyboards, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thank you to everybody who supports the pods and the radio shows and the writing. If you only have good things to say about the radio show, that's fine. We're going to keep doing great radio shows, but definitely tap into everything we have going on at Hawk Central, not just football and basketball. I mean, we have a pretty extensive team throughout, like baseball, women's basketball, especially wrestling with Cody, Goodwin recruiting. So we're a big family over at Hawk Central. We do our best to bring the best coverage, and we appreciate everybody who subscribes, and I encourage everybody who's listening to follow along on the ride.
Yeah, man. Two years, $22. Gosh, that's, you know.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. I feel bad for the people that paid the $49 annual on hawkcentral.com, $4 a month. They're just getting ripped off. Just kidding. Now, you guys are hopefully you're finding good value in that. And now we want to talk more about Hawkeye hoops, current Hawkeye hoops. Chris Murray, we mentioned, will be with his brother in New York on Thursday. But over the past week or so, got a chance to see Chris, talk to Chris, watch him in practice a little bit. And his teammates, Kennington. I know you were not part of this just because you were on vacation, but I know you're very, very familiar with kind of the pieces of this roster. So let's kind of break it down here. One thing that struck me yesterday on Tuesday's open practice, we got to talk to five different players and watch about a half-hour practice. Some guys that I was very intrigued with kind of getting my eyes on him. Very, very athletic point guard. Somebody that Iowa really hasn't had at that position under McCaffrey, in my opinion, a 6'3 guy with a lot of athleticism. And then tack on the fact that Amarion Nimmers, the walk-on from Rock Island, right? He was dunking. And I heard on Tom Cakert's podcast, I think Monday, that Nimmers has the highest vertical jump on the team by 3 inches. So you're talking about bringing in two freshman athletic point guards. That stood out to me. This is going to be a different type of team this year.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, speaking on members, that's a walk-on. That's not even somebody who Iowa brought in on scholarship. So that's somebody who, if you followed his story, somebody who had a very prominent run at the end of his senior year. And, you know, COVID and other things kind of restricted his recruitment, but he was able to come on to Iowa as a preferred walk-on. So to get somebody on that level that doesn't count against a scholarship count, at least right now, was a huge get, and somebody who's going to be an asset for that team, even if it's just, you know, in practice giving looks that maybe Iowa hasn't had, to your point. But I think it's going to be a really interesting team this year. Last year, they said that they're going to play fast and they're going to be an athletic team and a different style of team. I think when you see an evolution of that this year, I think they can even be, you know, even more athletic, you know, with all respect to Jordan Bohannon and how many records he broke at Iowa. Athletically, it's not the same as a Nimmers or a Desante Bowen or maybe even an Aaron Ulis or a Tony Perkins in the backcourt. You add that on to what they're going to have in Patrick McCaffrey in the second full year healthy and Chris Murray and, you know, whatever happens in the front court, and you have a team that's going to be able to run, switch multiple positions, hopefully shoot the ball, you know, all of those things. So it's going to be, you know, an exciting team, I think, and a fun team to watch. And I think that, you know, good news for the fans is there will be and there should be a lot more optimism about this year's team versus last year's team, where I think there was a lot more uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you lose two, you know, all-timers in Keegan Murray and Jordan Bohannon, but, you know, and of course Joe Toussaint as well. But there's definitely some intrigue, let's say, with these point guards. We talked to Aaron Ulis yesterday. It's kind of cool to hear him talk about his relationship with Joe Toussaint. They're still very, very close. And I think they both think they can flourish in this new situation. You know, Toussaint obviously at West Virginia now. Ulis really wants to take advantage of his opportunity, but also knows he's going to be competing with Bowen for minutes. And I really like Bowen's shot. I think Ulis's shot, if it doesn't develop, that could be a concern. And that's why I think Bowen will eventually start for the Hawkeyes. But we'll see. We'll see. I just I think there should be a lot of excitement out there at the point guard position. Another position, Kennington, that maybe we didn't necessarily expect. We saw, you know, Fran say time and time again, or at least repeatedly early in the process, we're going to get a big man in the portal. We're going to get a big man in the portal. Well, he didn't. He did not get a big man in the portal. And now the solution, I think, turns to Riley Mulvey. We heard Kenyon, remember on our show a couple weeks ago, say, Chris said, hey, Riley Mulvey, turning heads. Saw him in person yesterday. He is put together now, 6'11". I'm not saying he's there, but he looks the part now, Kennington, whereas last year he kind of looked like he was a little bit raw. I mean, as you might expect from a reclassified guy, but, let's think positive for a sec. If Iowa suddenly has a 6'11" guy with a little offensive skill who says he can be a rim protector at that five position and Riley Mulvey to go with Phil Pabracha, that's, to go, you know, coupled with what we talked about, a point guard, and we know the strength of the team is the 2 through 4 spots. That's intriguing.
Yeah, definitely. It was really interesting to hear Riley's perspective on what he thought about Fran going in and searching for big men out of the portal, and kind of what he said was, that's a reflection of us on the roster not doing our job, can't feel comfortable that he could, you know, rock out with what he had already on the roster. And I think for him, it kind of made him kind of look at himself in the mirror and just kind of consider what he could have done more to try to develop last year. Obviously reclassified, like you said, but I know that he spoke on not maybe working as hard as he could have after practice, yeah, and getting in the extra, he could develop in those things. And when you're that young and when you're in high school and you're that big, you necessarily don't have to put in that extra work because you can dominate so easily at the high school level. So I think that it was a maturity thing for him to kind of, you know, learn from that experience last year and really develop and kind of see that if he wants to compete and thrive at this level, he's going to have to put in hours that's not just team sanctioned workouts and practices. So it was really interesting to hear his perspective. And I think that he's really motivated to show that he can be that kind of reliable center that the Iowa is going to need if they're going to contend for another Big Ten championship. So if he can continue to go along this path, and obviously we're not going to know until we see a game later on this year, but if he can even give Iowa 15 minutes, you know, that's much more than what they have. Backups feel really good about that.
Absolutely. If Bracha and Mulvey can kind of hold down the five spot, and I'm not discounting a Gundele, but let's say it's those two, and then the point guards solidified with Ulis and Bowen. then I think you've got a perfect situation in that 2-4 window, you know, with Sanford, Perkins, Connor McCaffrey, Patrick McCaffrey, and of course, Chris Murray, who I think you could devote 30 to 35 minutes a night at the four position, or maybe the little bit of the three for Chris, and really not have him play the five at all. You know, Keegan played a lot of five last year. I think they want to avoid having Chris play the five if at all possible. So the roster sets up nicely. Obviously, you got to stay healthy and all that, but I really like the length, and I'm going to be writing about that later this week at HawkCentral.com. I got about 3 minutes left in tonight's show, Kennington. So I'm going to pitch one question to you, and it's probably going to be our last question of the night. But based on the conversation, interviews, you know, Iowa players are notoriously bullish on lots of things. They do not think 3-point shooting will be a problem, and they think they'll be a better defensive team. Which of those two topics or statements do you believe the most? Will Iowa be a good 3-point shooting team or a good defensive team? Which do you believe more?
I feel better about being a better defensive team for the reasons of what you alluded to earlier with the athleticism in the backcourt. I just think that if we're talking about foot speed and being able to stay in front of athletic guards, that's not going to be as much of a problem as it has been in years past for Iowa. And then we're looking at the dynamics of the size of the backcourt. I mean, you're going from that for a large part of last year, it was Joe Toussaint and Jordan Bohannon, two guys, you know, 6 feet, 6'1". And now we're looking at Desante Bowen and Aaron Ulis and Tony Perkins. Those are three guys, 6'3", plus Perkins, 6'4", mm-hmm. can guard multiple. So you add that dynamic in there with, you know, Patrick McCaffrey, who's, you know, 6'9", willing defender. Obviously, Chris is a good defender as well. We'll see what happens at that five spot. But I feel strongly about the defensive rotations and the lineups that Fran McCaffrey can put together based on the kind of athleticism and the makeup of this year's team.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the defense, I know people aren't going to believe that, but with Perkins having more minutes and just the length of Chris and the willingness to play defense from those guys, I do think that that's more likely just because, you're just going to lose so much with Bohannon. And your two guards are really probably going to be Tony Perkins and Connor McCaffrey. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we saw Connor get hot last year at times, but, you're going to have to show me that. I think Iowa's best three-point shooting might be coming from their forwards in Peyton Sanford, Patrick McCaffrey, and Chris Murray. Those would kind of be the three guys I would look for. But Tony Perkins says his shot is on fire this year. If you watch my video at HawkCentral.com, he's pretty confident about that shot. All right, Kenny, we got to go. We're out of time. Hopefully things cool down just a little bit between now and next Wednesday. But if they don't, we'll have you covered right here, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Glad to be back in full swing. And it's going to be a really busy next few weeks. So lock in with us.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm taking off. Sorry.
It seems like we've been doing that a lot. Like, kind of, I'm on, you're off, you know, vice versa. But stay locked in to Hawk Central. Regardless, you know, we're going to do our best to provide the best coverage. And we appreciate everybody who's been supporting us along the way.
All right, the Hawkeye Sports Machine will not stop. The Hawk Central Machine will not stop. Join us when next Wednesday night from 6 to 7 right here on 1460 KXNO. Good night, everyone.